Hello and welcome to the Atlanta Opera Podcast. My name is Stephen Lawless. I'm the stage director for the Atlanta Opera's presentation of The Marriage of Figaro. Join me as I share with you insights into this musical masterpiece by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Here are five things you need to know about The Marriage of Figaro. Number one. Mozart and his librettist Lorenzo de Ponti's The Marriage of Figaro is just one of many operatic adaptations from French playwright Pierre Beaumarchais's landmark Figaro trilogy. The three plays, The Barbara Seville, The Marriage of Figaro, and The Guilty Mother, tell the story of Figaro, Count Almaviva, and Rosina, who becomes the Countess Almaviva. The most famous of these operas are, of course, The Marriage of Figaro by Mozart, and Rossini's The Barbara Seville. But Italian composer Giovanni Paisiello was actually the first to adapt the Barbara Seville with his version in 1782, a full 16 years before Rossini's more popular composition. In 1966, French composer Darius Milhaud presented his take on the lesser-known play number 3, The Guilty Mother. Other composers have made use of Beaumarchais' characters in their original work, including Massenet's 1905 opera, Cherubin, which invents further exploits for the young page boy Cherubino. Most recently, John Corigliano's The Ghost of Versailles imagines the ghost of Beaumarchais staging a play within the opera featuring his famous characters. And as recently as 2016, Eleanor Langer, along with the British director and librettist David Pountney, created an opera for Welsh National Opera called Figaro Gets a Divorce. Number 2. The Marriage of Figaro is quite literally revolutionary. Written in 18th century France amidst a change in social attitudes that would ultimately lead to the French Revolution, Beaumarchais' biting satire of the aristocracy was initially banned by Louis XVI. For 3 years, this subversive story of servants outwitting their masters and denouncing long-held notions of aristocratic privilege was not officially performed. By 1784, the king had more or less relented, and the play quickly became the most popular in 18th century France. A blockbuster of its time, even attended by Benjamin Franklin during his stay in Paris. Mozart and de Ponte's opera, which premiered just 2 years later, softens the political satire for more focus on the human aspects of the story. Likely a reason the opera was able to premiere without interference from the ruling Habsburgs in Vienna. Nonetheless, the primary themes carry through. Figaro's intelligence, quick thinking, and a little bit of luck ultimately outwit Count Almaviva and force him to apologize to his wife, if not to society as a whole. Napoleon Bonaparte summed it up best, declaring The Marriage of Figaro the revolution already put into action. Our production works to highlight many of these revolutionary moments where servants stand up and the privileged world of the Almaviva dynasty starts to crumble. Number 3. Although a revered classical work cloaked in 18th century costumes and powdered wigs, The Marriage of Figaro is far from chaste or proper. The events of our story hinge on a legendary, although likely mythic, medieval custom known as le droit du seigneur, which was the right of the lord of the manor to claim the virginity of his serf's bride on their wedding night. Ensuring that Count Almaviva will not assert this right with Figaro's bride Susanna is the spark that sets everything into motion. As the evening progresses, nearly every character we meet is hoping for a liaison, concealing a liaison, trying to prevent a liaison, or some combination of all three. Innuendo, lasciviousness, and sexual desire are the driving forces of the action. With a scandalous plot twisting around who is, or appears to be, trying to bed whom, The Marriage of Figaro brings us down to a fundamental human truth. When we are naked in the dark, whatever our social status, we're all fundamentally the same. Number 4. The Lord of the Almaviva estate is clearly not a good man by our standards, but he is a typical man of his social class and his time. The Count has always been the most powerful person in every room, with unquestionable control over every soul in his home. He's simply never contradicted or disobeyed. With Susanna's virtue on the line, Figaro finally decides he must beat the Count at his own game. The servant is going toe-to-toe with the master, and we see the subversive and revolutionary ideas of Beaumarchais' play. Many moments in our production turn on small and later more significant acts of disobedience. Each time the Count has to recalibrate, he's experiencing resistance and disagreement for the first time. Each of the scenes finds its comedy not in the Count's idiocy, but in watching his torment at being pushed off balance and struggling to get back on top. Ultimately, the Count is brought down to earth, played not for a fool, but for a blind and proud man. Power is brought to its knees by the powerless, not because it is simply silly, but because it is unjust. Number 5. Beyond all the scheming and comedy, Figaro and Susanna win much more than simply humiliating the Count. Unlike their aristocratic lords, they have a faithful and loving relationship. Of course, fully understanding that is the journey of our hero. In the course of the action, Figaro is regularly coming into a room where things aren't quite as they appear and trying to piece together what has happened. He loves Susanna, but can he trust her? All evening, he's balancing intrigue, doubt, and anger as he works to outsmart the Count, but also to reassure himself about his bride-to-be. In Act 4, it all comes to a head in a flurry of disguises and comedic misunderstandings. Yet Mozart makes us feel true love with Susanna's sublime aria Dei Vieni, which Figaro believes is a secret seduction for the Count, but is, in fact, a sincere expression of her desire for Figaro, who she knows is concealed nearby. Ultimately, all the rich intrigue resolves and the truth is revealed. Figaro is reassured that Susanna's love is sincere and her desire is only for him. The Count is humiliated and repents his behavior. Our wise servants are victorious in more ways than one, and we have this glorious music of Mozart to tell us that all is well again, at least for now. I hope this gives you some insight into our upcoming production of The Marriage of Figaro, performed at the Cobb Energy Performing Arts Center. Thank you for joining me on the Atlanta Opera Podcast. If you enjoyed our 5 things to know about The Marriage of Figaro, please rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you find our podcast. It's a great way for more people like you to find out about our content. And don't forget to subscribe for more great episodes about all our coming productions this season.